Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The hour, and we begin this Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. There you will find at present at the very top of the page a post authored by Dr. John, in which he encourages you, and I encourage you, to go and nominate this program for a podcast award, the People's Podcast Award. All the instructions are right there, and we'd really appreciate it after, depending on how you do the math, 8 to 10 years of doing this. Something like that would be very, very nice. And it's not about Las Vegas. I would go to the People's Podcast Award if they were being held in Elmira, New York. In fact, I'd kind of like to go to Elmira, New York. My hero, Mr. Clemens, is buried there, and I think at least a stogie and a glass of whiskey left on his grave would be more than a matter of paying respects. But no, it's about trying to expand the reach of this little conversation we have going on here, and make it a bigger and broader conversation. I joked last night, although it is no joke, that if volume ever goes up to support it, by God, I'll do 6 hours a day. I'd love to do 6 hours a day. So if you will go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and follow the clear and concise instructions put forth by Dr. John and nominate this program and nominate Dr. Bill's program for the People's Podcast Awards, it would be, well, we'd all appreciate it tremendously. Then the next thing you got to do is, in your tweeting and your Facebooking, use the hashtag PCA13, number sign PCA13, to encourage others to do the same too. And that way we can get, maybe build a groundswell of support for this little, most grassrootsy of radio programs. And it is. It really, really is. No Buy Gold Now ads. No ads for Swedish mattresses based upon high-tech foams developed by NASA. No vacuum cleaners picking up bowling balls. No, you're not going to hear a damn bit of that here. Just conversation. That's why we call it conversation radio. That is what, in fact, makes this so very unique. And if you agree, helping to build the groundswell for one of these awards would be a big deal. Now, as the song says, we got a long way to go and a short time to get there. So I think nominations close on the 15th. After that, the nominations will be tallied. And if we're nominated, then we start the voting process. So, it'd be nice. It'd be nice. It's kind of like the Oscars. Just getting nominated is pretty cool. So any help is much appreciated. And, of course, it also goes without saying that this program runs on listener contributions. Not like National Petroleum Radio, where listener contributions means, a few million dollars here and a few million dollars there from Northrop Grumman or Monsanto or any of the other corporate sleazebags they deal with. This is real listener-supported radio. Listener-driven radio. What you find interesting is what ends up in the program. And the things that you want to bring to the table by way of conversation are what we talk about. We welcome new listeners. We welcome new callers. Folks who might never participate in another call-in program, participate here. Because this is we are very proud of the fact that this is a safe and welcoming spot. And it all happens because of you. Now, we dug ourselves a little hole last week, and we're still in it. We had some kind contributions last night, but we find ourselves looking for around, well, $300 this evening. 10 folks at 30 at 10, you know the drill. So if you'd like to go to headonradionetwork.com and hit the PayPal button, it is all tremendously appreciated, and it is what keeps things going. Of course, you can also use the snail mail address, The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PM... Did I say snail mail? Damn! That's hardwired in. I'm sorry, the traditional overland mail system, the United States Postal Service, the Postal Service that is the choice of we the people, The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, Beckley, WV25801. And remember, checks, money, orders, and the like should not be made to Bob Kincaid, but should be made to Head on Communications or The Horn or something like that, because that makes it easy when Boss Man Wayne picks up the mail and sends it on down to the credit union so that we can then turn around and keep paying bills. So, I mean, there you go. Yeah, just I hate doing that. But it is necessary if we are to continue this. All right, it is. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. So, it's worth remembering that Titanic Tuesday is named after the Titanic wit, the Titanic intellect that drives the right wing in this country. This is, of course, dripping with scorn and sarcasm and contempt, in case anyone is unsure. Because actually, the right wing have itsy bitsy teeny weeny little ootsy the pea brains, which is probably being a little bit rough on the peas. And so it is that we have a number of examples of the same. My day, now that Ferg is back in public school, and in order to save him a truly nauseating and miserable bus ride in the morning, I often drive him to school, and today was no exception, and that means that I'm up at about the same time that that guy with the dead intern in his office. I'm sorry, it's like, you ever get allergies toward this, this time of the year as the leaves are... Clasutis! 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 Joe Scarborough comes on about 6 o'clock in the morning on that progressive television network. Oh, what a low it is to laugh. And my days get off to a cranky start. But I think he got surpassed today, even though he was his usual prickish self. And he got surpassed by Mrs. Greenspan later in the day. I forget what they call her little hour of bad television over there on that hot progressive cable TV network. But toward the end of her program, I was sitting there answering emails and doing various and sundry things,
tweeting and Facebooking and show prep and trying to read all the newspapers. And apparently they let her have a couple of minutes, Mrs. Greenspan. She is married to Alan Greenspan, isn't she? Or have I got a different D.C. doyen in mind? But at any rate, Andrea Mitchell closed out her program by delivering a sort of jeremiad against the government of the United States. And by that, she meant the President and the Congress. She had fulminated mightily over the fact that some widows and orphans of some soldiers who ought not be in Afghanistan in the first place, can we note that, please, who should have been brought home long, long ago. That's why I still have to have my Bring Them Home Now sticker on the back of my vehicle that's been there since 2003. Anyway, she was fulminating about the fact that some widows and orphans have been stiffed from their death benefits in the last week because the government is shut down. And it is, in fact, an outrageous news story. But because she operates in the incredibly thin oxygen atmosphere that leads to total brain death inside the for-profit media class of Washington, D.C., Andrea Mitchell was utterly unable to comprehend, understand, perceive that it's both sides aren't doing this. But nonetheless, it was another one of those exercises, and they are nausea-inducing exercises at this point, and it seems to be the only thing of which the for-profit media are capable of telling both sides to take care of things. You would think that a woman who has been in Washington, D.C. since apparently something like the reign of Shalmaneser IV, I think she was first brought there on a gold-covered litter carried by body servants. You would think she would know by now the structure of how monies get appropriated in order to have a budget in this country. There's a little pamphlet out there called The Constitution. Dr. Bill O'Brien talks about it frequently. I invite Andrea Mitchell to tune in and actually listen to Andrea. It really would. He's on the air when you're not. You're probably six or seven martinis into your afternoon by then. Kick back, relax. Dr. Bill is soothing, and he's also very informative. And you might learn something about all of that which you fulminate in such blithe ignorance. Oh, the government, all of you, solve this now. Oh, well, if Andrea's going to have a shit hissy, I guess we better take care of this. So I guess President Not Sure is supposed to just declare himself maximum dictator for life, pass his own budget. All in favor? Aye. All opposed? And we'll just bypass this whole legislative branch thingy. And yet, this is something. If you're doing your reading and you're keeping up, this is something that is gaining ground in this country. That somehow or another, President Obama is supposed to give up something. And as I said last night, and as I will continue to say, this is probably not the place to come if you want that full-throated defense at all costs, every time, all the time, forevermore, of Barack Obama. Because, he's open to criticism on a number of fronts. But this ain't one. But I also have to acknowledge at the same time that there are people out there who, on ostensibly on the left. Oh, F me running. What left? What left? Please. But there, he's going to sell us down the river, by God. He got nothing to sell. At least not right now, he doesn't. Now, granted, the right wing in this country, and the teabaggers, and the birthers, and the deathers, and the birchers, and the tenthers, and the various and sundry assorted booger eaters, and toenail toothpickers, they think he has something to offer. If he would just bare his breast and allow them to plunge in the long knives and eat his liver raw, well, we might get some sort of little pissant piecemeal budget out of the process. But that's about it. I mean, I really do. I have some sympathy for being in this kind of a position, because in the struggle against mountaintop removal, we have from time to time been told by really smart people who know much better than hillbillies being poisoned to death how we can solve our various problems. And it's one time or another, one smart person or another has said, well, you have to sit down at the table and negotiate with the coal industry. I mean, it's a give and take. I mean, what about their jobs? To which my response has always been, excuse me? We've given up the integrity of our bodies all the way down to a subcellular level? We've given up the ability to live in our homes without breathing toxins? We've given up the ability to raise gardens in our soil? We've given up the abilities of our napping infants to sleep without being startled awake by massive blasting? They've taken everything we have to give here. There's nothing left to negotiate over except our continued existence. Well, that'll be fine. In essence, that's where Barack Obama finds himself. And bless his optimistic heart, he stepped to the podium today and had a little talk with the nation and spoke as plainly and as bluntly as I think I've ever heard the man speak. And it was not a beautiful speech. He gives a great speech. And while he didn't flash gang signs or hop up and down and scream or anything, he got about as close to being outright angry as I think I've ever seen. And he referred to what the Republicans in the House are doing as what it is: extortion. And so I give him kudos for that, even though I recognize that there are certain people on the every time I said the left, he's just getting ready to surrender again. Maybe he is. Maybe he sits around fondly thinking of that magical moment when he will finally get his grand bargain and grannies can go start pricing cat food and little children can give up on the idea of Head Start, and pregnant mothers can say, Wick, what is that? What is Wick? Maybe so. But that's not what's going on right now. But for those of us who revel in at least a little bit of resolve on the part of President Not Sure, it does not help to have Mrs. Greenspan out there telling him to get with it, take his shirt off, and get down there and you know, hand the knives to Brutus and Cassius and the like. Brutus is an honorable man, but Cassius has a lean and hungry look. I don't know who would be Boner in that tableau. Or who Boner would be. But it doesn't help. And at the bottom, the bottom line, exactly. West Virginia Hio in the chat room says, the poor have no more to give. And we don't. The working class has no more to give. We're all give out, as we say here in the hills and hollers. We're up to our eyeballs in freedom because freedom's just a word for nothing more to lose. Nothing left to lose. But somewhere in Washington, D.C., at this hour, Mrs. Greenspan is on her 13th gin Ricky and is angered that Barack Obama has not found common ground with that last surviving alien from Independence Day. You remember, the president says, what do you want? And the alien says, die! That's your average teabagger. But then again, Mrs. Greenspan doesn't understand that this is a revolution. And I'm going to keep hammering that point home until you know, I'm either proven wrong or acknowledged correct. This is a revolution. This is how these things begin. By the way, an update. I had a note from, I have a note here from Jim. The 11 October Truck Fest is canceled. Anybody got any details on that? I didn't get a link. And thanks very much to Philip, who just got us started with a $50 contribution. And thanks to Sal, who is there night after night and deeply appreciated. And so we are at $60 this evening. And that means we've got $90 to go just to meet the evening's fundraising goal. And then maybe we can push on toward coming even. Let me look back over. West Virginia, Ohio, in the chat room noting, could our side have a list of demands? Because, and that's so true, because the problem with these godforsaken teabaggers is that, well, from organized crime will make you an offer you can't refuse. Teabaggers will make you an offer you can't understand. And now this latest fraud of, well, we just want to talk. I mean, who the hell are they? John Cusack standing out the window with their boombox on their shoulder playing In Your Eyes? This is not that. I just want to talk. Stella! And yes, it's easy to go into that analogy and say that we are in a deeply abusive relationship from which it appears that Barack Obama is trying to extricate himself. But I think making that analogy might be not the right one, because the horror of domestic abuse is not something to which one should make comparisons. For the same reason that I have stayed away from all comparisons between the present circumstance and a certain little fellow with a Charlie Chaplin mustache who tried to wreck the planet. It's not helpful. This coup d'etat through which we have been living must be understood on its own terms and as its own thing. There are obvious historical comparisons. Good God, for anybody who bothered to study it, the increasing dysfunction of Republican Rome from about 125 BCE down to 030 BCE, when it ultimately collapsed and was solidified into empire under Octavian, is an obvious comparison. And there are others. 1850 to 1860 in the United States comes to mind. But this really is its own thing, because we haven't seen the likes of this before. But nevertheless, Mrs. Greenspan, who was probably throwing the drinks back two at a time now, I'll have a double and make that a double. Isn't that a quadruple? Thinks both sides are to blame, and I have lost all patience whatsoever for anybody who thinks that. And by the way, just a program reminder, Dr. Bill will be back tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern. He had many, many meetings today. There are things in the works. But speaking of slamming back the occasional gin Ricky, and being as this is Titanic Tuesday, let's meet Steve Hadley. Somewhere around Capitol Hill, there's a bar called Sonoma. And I think I've seen it, but I don't think I've ever been in it. Steve Hadley is, of course, trying to, and he must certainly be a bagger or a conserve a freak of some sort, repig licking. You never want to miss an opportunity for marketing. I know this in theory, but I can't put it into practice for the life of me. Steve Hadley runs Sonoma, a watering hole of some sort on Capitol Hill. And last week, you may remember that President Not Sure and Vice President Biden went out for a sandwich to this place that was giving a 10% discount to furloughed federal workers. And you may recall the story about Hyundai Motors of South Korea, who, and curiously enough, it wasn't GM or Chrysler or Ford. Wonder why. Said that they would forbear on all payments until the shutdown was over with. These are acts of decency as well as acts of public relations. There's no real loss in it. There's probably greater loss in it for the sandwich shop than there is for Hyundai. Enter Steve Hadley of Sonoma on Capitol Hill. who says that if a furloughed government worker comes into his establishment, his watering hole, that he'll sell him a beer for, or her, for $2. This story comes via Bob Cull over at Americans Against the Tea Party. A $2 draft in Washington, D.C. is kind of a bargain. Now, maybe at happy hour you can get something like that, but not through, not just as part of general pricing. So if you walk into Sonoma in Washington, D.C., and you're a furloughed government working stiff, you can get yourself a $2 beer. There's nothing in here about how much Mrs. Greenspan's highballs are going to cost. But you, the furloughed worker, can get a beer for $2. Here's where it gets interesting, however. This new price list starts at $2, and then it goes to $25. The $25 is the price for a draft beer for a member of Congress. His reasoning, according to the report, is that members of Congress are still getting paid, and they're still highly paid. What is it? A member of the House gets $174,000 a year, so $25 a beer shouldn't break them. Yeah, okay. Now the fun part. If President Not Sure, that one living in Steve Hadley's White House, should happen to walk in thirsty from a busy day of not having really anything to offer the Repigwickens except his very life, well, the tab for the draft that Steve Hadley will pull for the President of the United States, the Chief Magistrate, is $702. Now, why is that? Well, Steve Hadley is a freedom-protecting patriot. Wolverines! And he's not going to be forced to buy into none of that damn commie pinko Obamacare. And he thinks his penalty is going to be $700 when the IRS comes to take him away to the FEMA re-education camp. And he's not going to pay the $700 because he's a freedom-protecting patriot. He's going to refuse to buy any health insurance. Because, you know, bartenders are known for being really health-conscious individuals who lead lives easily up into the 90s. Don't need any health insurance. Well, first of all, there's no $700 penalty for not buying into Obamacare. Second, his bar has less than 50 employees and therefore is exempt from the employer mandate in the first place. Third, the employer mandate, even the part that was delayed for 1 year, affects only 4% of employers. So we're simply left with the titanic intellect of a guy pulling drafts behind a bar on Capitol Hill. And you have to figure that if Mrs. Greenspan walked in there, they would have a jolly old conversation talking about how both sides are to blame in this. Oh, F him with a red-hot swizzle stick. Some of this stuff becomes actually physically painful to read. Irish Dave noting, both sides to blame? There are two sides to this? Let's see, one side you have the corporation, and the other side we have the... Bob, you're such a kidder. And yes, Irish Dave, I was talking to Boss Man Lane the other day, and your Jackson duet did in fact arrive via the U.S. Postal Service, the People's Mail Delivery Service. So thank you very much. I guess it's a good thing I'm not in Washington, D.C. right now, because I'd be... I can just hear Brother Bo now. Hey, Bob, where are you going? I'm going down to Sonoma Bar. And then the call for bail. And then of course this question, which is equally valid from Irish Dave. How much for a bottle of Merlot shared by Weepy John of Orange and Barack Hussein? He also observes, but the bartender's code includes the rule, when all else fails, try reading the instructions. No bars came with instructions. Let's see, don't serve toddlers. How old are you?
I'm 9.
I never smoked a cigarette until I was 10. Give me that. On the other hand, I mentioned the fact that I have resisted in this whole thing references to points of history too far afield from the actual American experience. That does not, however, representing Brenda Barton of Arizonistan, however, has not been able to so resist. She got all bent out of shape because the national parks are still closed. She said the following.
Someone is paying the National Park Service thugs overtime for their efforts to carry out the order of De Fuhrer, that's D-E. Where are our constitutional sheriffs who can revoke the Park Service Ranger's authority to arrest? Do we have any sheriffs with a pair?
Given a more than generous offer to walk her stupidity back, the AZ Capital Times reports, in a report by Hank Stevenson, Republican Representative Brenda Barton of Payson compared President Barack Obama to Adolf Hitler on her Facebook page today in a post urging county sheriffs to revoke authority from the National Park Service thugs who are enforcing the federal shutdown on national parks lands. The author notes that Führer is a German term for a leader that is most often associated with Hitler. Democrats, and I love this sentence, Barton's comments drew strong criticism and condemnation from Democrats and others on social media. Democrats and others. Oddly enough, it doesn't say Democrats and Republicans. It just says others. I think we can presume from the use of others that Republicans are not part of that sort of Venn diagram universe of others. In a telephone interview, however, with the Arizona Capital Times, Barton stood by the comments, saying the comparison between Obama and Hitler was apt, at least in their style of leadership.
He's dictating beyond his authority.
You silly twit.
No, I'm not running down the German history garden path. I'm not going to talk about the Enabling Act and how it was passed by the... No!
Bad, Bob, bad. Barton said Obama is leading America down a slippery slope away from a constitutional democracy toward an imperial dictatorship, and the people... Because, you know, if it was an imperial... What? It would be okay. And the people of America should be aware. She said murdering millions of Jews, gypsies, and gays wasn't the only thing that happened in Nazi Germany, and America under Obama is looking a lot like the early days of Germany under Hitler. Oh, please. Sometimes it's... It gets to be too much. I mean, sometimes these things can be funny. Sometimes they're really, really not. I mean, the Holocaust wasn't all he did. I'm not going to be dragged into this. I will not be dragged into this.
You've got a collapse of confidence in the currency. People are going to panic.
Yeah.
There's going to be gold riots, atonal music, right. Political chaos, right. Mass suicide,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's Germany before Hitler. Uh-huh. You can see that.
Yeah.
Jesus. I don't know what people are going to do when a six-pack of Budweiser costs $1,200.
Oh, that'll be off.
And here we are. Let's see, 12-ounce beer, 702. No! The six-pack of beer is going to cost $4,200. But representing Brenda Barton wasn't done.
It's not just the death camps.
You know, for the people who died in the death camps were enough. Just saying, representing Barton.
Hitler started in the communities with national health care and gun control. You better read your history. Germany started with national health care and gun control before any of that other stuff happened, and Hitler was elected by a majority of people.
Do I really have to? No, I don't. You already know that the Hitler gun control thing is a complete canard, right? I mean, it's the reddest of red herrings. It's a red herring so red that it's mummified in goddamn tea bags. Okay, let's go ahead and get this out there. Adolf Hitler promoted gun ownership, not gun control. These are things with which Representative Barton is utterly unfamiliar insofar as they are facts.
This is an outrageous form of federal imperial government.
Where's my Star Wars imperial marching theme? Bum, bum-a-da-dum, dum-a-da-dum, dum-a-da-dum. Honest to God.
nobody, well, I read this story earlier and I immediately thought of a piece by Eddie Izzard. Because the sort of haplessness of it all reminds me of, well, it reminds me of what President Not Sure is going through.
But there must have been a Death Star canteen, yeah? There must have been a cafeteria downstairs, in between battles, where Darth Vader could just chill and go down.
I will have the penne alla arrabbiata.
You'll need a tray.
Do you know who I am?
Do you know who I am?
This is not a game of who the fuck are you. For I am Vader. Darth Vader. Lord Vader. I can kill you with a single thought.
Well, you'll still need a tray.
No, I will not need a tray. I do not need a tray to kill you. I can kill you without a tray, with the power of the Force, which is strong within me. Even though I could kill you with a tray, if I so wished. For I would hack at your neck with the thin bit until the blood flowed across the canteen floor.
No, the food is hot. You'll need a tray to put the food on.
Oh, I see the food is hot. I'm sorry, I did not realize. Oh, say for the... Yes, I thought you were challenging me to the fight to the death.
Fight to the death? This is a canteen. I work here.
Yes, but I am Vader. I am Lord Vader. Everyone challenges me to a fight to the death. Lord Vader, Darth Vader. I'm Darth Vader. Lord, Sir Lord Vader. Sir Lord Darth Vader. Lord Darth, Sir Lord, Lord Vader of Cheem. Sir Lord Baron von Vaderham. The Death Star. I run the Death Star.
What's the Death Star?
This is the Death Star. You're in the Death Star. I run this star.
This is the star. This is a fucking star.
I run it. I'm your boss.
You're Mr. Stevens.
No, I'm... Who is Mr. Stevens?
He's head of catering.
I'm not head of catering. I am Vader. I can kill catering with a thought.
What?
I can kill you all. I can kill me with a thought. Just... I'll get a tray. Fuck it. This one's wet. And this one's wet. And this one's wet. This one is wet. This one is wet. Did you dry these in a rainforest? Why? With the power of the Death Star, do we not have a tray that is fucking dry? I do not... No, no, no. I was here first.
You have to form a queue if you want food. Can I have a... Oh, penne alla arrabbiata. That'd be very nice.
No, no, no. Do you know who I am?
That's Jeff Vader, that is.
I am not Jeff Vader, I'm Darth Vader.
What, Jeff Vader runs the Death Star?
No, Jeff... No, I run the Death Star.
You Jeff Vader? No, I'm Darth Vader. Are you his brother? Can you get his autograph?
I can't get it... No, I'm Jeff... All right, I'm Jeff Vader. I'm Jeff Vader.
Can I have your autograph?
No, fuck off. Or I'll kill you with a tray. Give me penne alla arrabbiata or you shall die. And you, and everyone in this canteen... Death by tray it shall be.
They can't... The baggers, birthers, deathers, birchers, tenthers, and assorted booger eaters can't decide whether he's Hitler, Darth Vader, or some illegitimate clown that was foisted upon them by virtue of Acorn voter fraud. Ay. A couple of notes rolling in. Obama-er care being the subject line from GK in Minnesota. Hey, Bob, it would only be fitting that those free, dumb, protecting individuals that are not in favor of getting health insurance sign a couple of waivers. First, they could sign a waiver stating they will not use the emergency care room. And secondly, they will have to be on a cash basis. Hear, hear. This is reasonable. I think we need a third caveat that they promise not to try to use the federal bankruptcy court process in order to evade their medical bills once they rack them up. Oh, wait, that goes back to... Yeah, that would be two subsection A little I. Right? Cash basis. Robert in Australia noting, oh my, I'm living in Nazi Australia. Oh my God, Bob. I live in a country that's had socialized medicine for 38 years and strict gun control laws for a decade. I'm living in Nazi Australia. Perrin runs in circles, knees fall off, collapses to floor. who knew they'd triumph. But I saw a piece the other day, I saw a video clip of a radio interview that Neil deGrasse Tyson did, in which he fielded a question from some science-y person who asked whether or not NASA could provide him with the trajectory and coordinates for sending all the teabaggers into a black hole. And because he is an incredibly bright individual, Neil deGrasse Tyson said, well, yeah, NASA can do that. I assume you've already got the rocket and you're just looking for the guidance? Which was pretty cute. But then he also said, but I got a problem with that. I don't want to... Why send the teabagger congressman when, in fact, it's the teabagger voters who sent them to Washington, and therefore the teabagger voters who need to get on the rocket and head for the middle of the black hole? You know what? Black holes don't deserve this kind of disrespect. They're not dumb. There's apparently nothing in this universe that is immune to the power, the profound power of a black hole. But I am willing to warrant that the powers of physics itself would collapse if you tried to send a rocket load of teabaggers into a black hole. The black hole would reject the teabaggers, and that's why they're here. Thanks to Ed. Ed was a big help last night, and he's jumped in again this evening. Tonight's fundraising has now risen, I should say, to $95. Thank you very kindly. No. $110. So we're on the way to taking care of tonight's fundraising, and thank you. Thank you very much. Because we just had a note from Kate under the subject line just saying, come on, you guys, $5 or $10 from each of you wouldn't hurt. He's going to need it because he has no idea how much cat food costs, bless his heart. And this is true. Actually, I do know it because there's a cat. And man, does she have a little Friskies problem. Phew, it's bad. But it ain't cheap. No, Kate has told me for years that it ain't a cat food thing. We're all going to be eating canned mackerel, which is probably canned, God knows, you know, it's probably Soylent mackerel at this point. Thank you, Kate. And Kate pushed it up to 140, which leaves 10 to finish the night, and then we can get started on getting out of the hole. So thank you, Kate. I need to go back to the chat room for a minute here. Sparky, this is a different representative, Barton. This is representing this is the female representing Barton out of Arizona. Sparky asking, is this the same guy who thinks the wind is finite? I think that was the same clown who was done in by an Onion story suggesting that all the wind turbines could blow Earth out of its orbit. There's so many things they don't understand. Closed loop being a big one. All right, so give me a second. I got to follow up on this. Oh, there it is. Thank you for the heads up, Jim. The trucker protest for October 11th, 2013 was to strike... you know what it was about. You know what it was for. It is now being reported to be canceled. In a news update October 8th, representatives indicate that the comments to U.S. News were designed to do one thing and one thing only, stir the feather of the mainstream media. They then said, nothing gets the attention like the mainstream media, like some sort of disastrous threat. I knew it was going to ruffle some feathers. Feather stirrers. That's what they are, feather stirrers. And now they're saying it was just a hoax. I submit they were quite serious about it. But then people began to take umbrage at the idea of such clear and open treason. After I said the cat has a little Friskies problem, Randy in PA notes, the company probably puts cocaine in the little Friskies. Well, given another story I got here in the stack, that's probably not entirely impossible. Then this. Greetings from the United States of Anarchy, Bob. Sorry to have been absent lately, but chronic illness is like the ocean for the addicted surfer. Every day you face the waves, and some days you get a great roll, and others you're smashed to the ocean floor and emerge numb. When I think that great-great-uncle Leo lost his house because of his overzealousness for suppression of anarchy, expressed through his defense of the Sacco-Vanzetti verdict that he helped render, and despite his best efforts in these anarchic times of non-government, many more have subsequently lost their houses because of a federal government that is far more concerned with providing welfare to corporations rather than individuals, it makes me want to holler. As far as I'm concerned, I am now watching an ideological coup while so many lemmings are willing to clutch their Bibles and their ersatz constitutions and willing to go over the cliff as long as they and their representatives can argue that Obama's presidency just proves that when the darkened they move into the neighborhood, even as sacrosanct an environment as the White House, will go to hell. By the way, NB, Ed, I still don't know. You remember the list of teabagging hate that I read off last night? I still haven't figured out what salt stealing is in reference to Mrs. Obama. Did anybody ever find that story? Because I'm flummoxed. Anyway, back to Philip. As for Mrs. Greenspan, anyone who judges Alan Greenspan as worthy of sexual desire has already shown an appalling lack of judgment. I haven't seen the old lecher since he opened his economic raincoat before Congress and showed that he had nothing to hide because he truly had nothing. No, in my mind, Big Al would have been better suited to be a supporting actor in an early John Waters film, but I digress. Well, he kind of was, Philip. You got to remember that if you've got the stomach for it and take your anti-emetics early on and you go rooting around in the early history of the cult of personality that surrounded Ayn Rand, you will find a young Greenspan literally sitting at her feet. I know. Ew. And that is worse than any John Waters film ever produced. Back to Philip. I watched Obama blinking today and was unhappy. No doubt, despite his momentary peak, concessions will be made to placate an angry public that blames both sides equally out of profound ignorance, and the Republican base will become that much more base, while we progressives will once again understand that there is nothing left for the Democrats to offer. The party that wants to rule rather than govern will emerge with their faces and our asses, and the only mention of race being a factor will be in a possible new safety measure for Indianapolis racers, while the outrageous rebuke of the choice of the majority of us for president because he happens to be half black will continue until 2014. Much as I love Dr. Bill, the Constitution and representation mean little nowadays, and I'm hunkering down for the latest assault by the representatives of the plutocracy until I decide whether to emigrate and receive my retirement changes in a more progressive environment. The meme of both sides to blame makes me think that it is time to blame my penis for the excretions of my butt. I can no longer watch the news, and as much sympathy as I, as a former federal employee who experienced the shutdown in 1995, feel for my former co-workers, I wish the president would hold firm. Let the government be shut down long enough for all Americans, not only the poor, the aged, the disabled, and the children, to suffer sufficiently to realize why we need government that preserves the well-being of the commonwealth. Of course, we have no commonwealth in the United States, and I've sadly come to the conclusion that what's a little economic ruin when we've already made a de facto concession that representative government in which the interests of the majority determine policy no longer works. The Republicans have shown that we are a nation of corrupt men rather than laws. My weak protest is to no longer refer to the Republican Party. It's the white party that protects only interests of the affluent whites and regards the rest of us as unwelcome detritus weighing down the ship of state, which it wants to shrink into a rowboat. I'm almost mad enough to never vote again, but then that's what the reactionaries want, and I can't concede a franchise for which so many fought and died. I'll end this screed here by noting that here within the shadow of the Capitol, the news is constant and meaningless. So I turned you on, despite a headache, in an effort to find a refuge. Be well. I'm going to take that as a whopping big compliment that I and we, this little community, our conversation, are not meaningless. And with any luck at all, we'll put the healing hands of reason to Brother Philip and make that headache go away. And Philip just upped the ante, so we are past 150 and $15 into sorting our way out of the hole. So thank you very much, Philip. But you begin to get a sense, I hope, of what we're up against. And we haven't even, well, I mean, we've hit some low points, as it were, but there's more yet to be done. By the way, Representative Barton said she didn't believe she owed Obama an apology. The author of this article can't even say President Obama. She said that her comment was designed to attract attention and start a conversation, but she still doesn't think it is insensitive or controversial and didn't regret the post.
It got your attention. He's doing something controversial. It's not controversial that I'm criticizing him. I don't think that's controversial at all.
Oh, okay, so let's see if we can get Representative Barton's attention. Representing Barton is a pockmarked syphilitic prostitute who has all the charm and all the brains. Oh, goodness me. I can't think of a woman in history I despise more than this woman. Oh, well, so much for getting her attention. F her. Feed her fish heads. But we now turn back to a favorite topic of mine. Alabama Stan. On those entirely too rare occasions when I get to go to the beach, it is nigh impossible to go to a beach in a progressive part of the country. For me, at least. And raised as I was, my favorite beach in the world is down in the boot heel of Alabama Stan, a place that's lovingly referred to as L.A., Lower Alabama. Sometimes referred to, and they take this a little less kindly, sometimes referred to as the Redneck Riviera. Orange Beach, Gulf Shores, badly overdeveloped, but once upon a time it had these broad expanses of white sand beach that were whiter and brighter than freshly poured cane sugar. That beach is a part of Baldwin County, Alabama, and Baldwin County, Alabama is agriculturally rich. I mean, they've got a three growing season agronomy down there. In Baldwin County is a little community, and a lovely one, I must say. It's part of the conflict of the inherent conflict of places like this. Beautiful little communities, absolutely brimming over with hate. In this case, Daphne High School. Now, I think we all know that I am a proponent of language education, not just English, but all the hardwired mental doors that open when you start teaching children to think in a different language. My high school, and this is sensitive for me because my high school offered Spanish, French, German, and Latin. And I took the German for 1 year, I took the Latin for 3, and the French for 2. Never got around to Spanish. Ran out of time. They kicked me out. Been here for 4 years, Bob. Time to move on. But at one point in time, my Latin teacher happened to also be the woman who had taught Russian, had taught English to the Russian cosmonauts for the U.S.-Soviet Soyuz joint mission into space. And she was willing to provide an instruction in a course in basic Russian for such high schoolers as wanted to take it. I was one of those people that wanted to take it. It was exotic. It was Russian. I wanted to get beyond До свидания and товарищ. I wanted to be able to order borscht in borscht's native tongue. And maybe some tongue in. It's never mind. Never got to take that Russian class. Because outrage was manifested. You have to remember that this is toward the end of the Carter administration and the beginnings of the long Reagan nightmare. God-fearing, upstanding Christian parents didn't want their children learning to speak commie. Well, Daphne, Alabama, and Daphne High School are about as far away from where I grew up as you can get between two points in the state of Alabama, but some stuff simply does not change. AL.com reporting under the byline of Sally Pearsall. Daphne High School is offering Arabic language classes instead of French classes this fall, taught by Sanaa El-Khattabi, a former University of South Alabama professor. The school had a staff position open after its French teacher retired, said Meredith Foster, Daphne High School's principal. We had to make a decision to replace that foreign language unit. School officials believe the class will help prepare students to succeed in a global economy. Note the use here of the Fox News style book, but some Daphne residents are upset that the Baldwin County school system is permitting its students to learn what they call a culture of hate. Chuck Peeritz, who has two sons, Isaiah and Isaac, oh dear, says, when you teach Arabic, you have to teach the culture along with it. The culture is intertwined with Islam. And Chuck Peeritz is all upset about Omar Hamami, who grew up in Daphne and then left Daphne to become a jihadi. Well, that's another red flag for us, Peeritz said. It's possible that Hamami was killed a few weeks ago by members of his former Somali Islamist militant group, Al-Shabaab. Then there are the trenchant observations of one Michael Reif, another resident of Daphne, Alabama.
This year's America, and English is our language. And while I understand the alleged premise of offering Arabic at our high school, I don't agree with it. It is not just another language. It is a language of a religion of hate. I'm concerned about our taxpayer dollars going to fund such a program because I don't believe it has a lot of foundational value.
I'm pretty sure when I say that Michael Reif did not learn phrases like foundational value from doing the New York Times goddamn crossword puzzle. That's straight out of some right-wing blatherskate website.
Foundational value. It just concerns me.
He's concerned. He's a concern troll, Michael Reif is.
It just concerns me that we're headed down a path of further eroding our society to a Muslim-based society or a Sharia law, the moral code of Islam, and I'm not willing to let that happen without something to say about it, no matter how goddamn stupid I make myself out to be when I says it.
Okay, I added that last part. But it gets worse. Oh, the creeping Sharia. It creeps insidiously. Piritz was also disturbed, he said.
Now, there's nothing in here that says this. This is not a compulsory class in Arabic. Apparently, English is not compulsory at Daphne High School in Daphne, Baldwin County, Alabama, Stan. Certainly, critical reasoning hasn't made it to the curriculum yet.
Piritz was also disturbed, he said, after meeting with Baldwin school officials to voice his concerns and learning of plans to expand Arabic and other language course offerings.
Other language course offerings.
If English was good enough for Almighty God, it ought to be good enough for us.
Okay, he didn't say that, but he's thinking it, and I know he is. Piritz was also disturbed, he said, after meeting with Baldwin school officials to voice his concerns and learning of plans to expand Arabic and other language course offerings in Daphne's elementary and middle schools. Because, you know, that's where you get them. Their hormones go crazy in about 6th, 7th, 8th grade. And while they're sitting there, the little boys and the little girls with their hormones raging, that's when you take the little girls and you give them their first burqa and they put it on willingly. And that's when you tell the boys never to shave them fuzzy little granny hairs that start to sprout on their chins. Because God wants them. God will only love them if they grow a Sharia beard. No, upon learning that there would be other language course offerings in Daphne's elementary and middle schools, Mr. Piritz said, "They're trying to indoctrinate our children with this culture that has failed. Why should we want to teach our kids a failed culture when we have a culture that has been successful? All we have to do is follow our Christian culture, which has brought this nation to the pinnacle of success. I don't see why they'd want to teach this." There's a 3-hour program in that paragraph all by itself. Failed Arabic culture. I hope to holy F nobody ever tells Mr. Piritz about that algebra they're teaching there in the Baldwin County public schools.
X is a cross turned sidewards as a mockery of the suffering of our Lord Jesus Christ, and they're teaching them all about that imaginary number X, when we know that God give us real numbers. 1, 2, 6. Let me get my shoes off.
A failed culture. Might I point out to Mr. Peeritz that he's probably paying something around $3.50 a gallon for gasoline when it's 10 cents a gallon in Saudi Arabia. Failed culture. But never mind the immediate. That failed culture? His white European ancestors would still be scrabbling over what the wolves and the buzzards didn't want had that failed culture not preserved the works of Aristotle and Plato, of Sophocles, Euripides, Lucan, of Cicero and Caesar, and even the dirty poetry. The dirty poetry of Catullus. Amemus mea lesbia. Amamus mea lesbia atque amemus. Plutarch. Not without the failed culture, no Plutarch. And we won't even talk about Granada, Spain at all. We won't talk about how after the forces of God Almighty and his son Jesus Christ had driven the Arabs out of the Iberian Peninsula, the good Christians went back to wiping their hind ends with their bare hands, you know, in the name of Jesus. We'll probably not even discuss the fact that had that failed culture remained in the Iberian Peninsula, there might be a mighty, mighty native culture up and down both continents of this half of the planet that could have fended off those white folks when they came over with all their filthy diseases and their unclean ways and their murderous Christianity. Won't talk about that either. There's about 1,400 kids at Daphne High School. Among those 1,400 kids, they have students from 30 countries. And offering Arabic is a way to make the school more welcoming to many of those children. And if you've got Arabic speakers in your student population, imagine how much easier that makes learning Arabic. And how much easier it makes learning English for the Arabic-speaking students. We don't want that, though. At least Mr. Peeritz doesn't. Alan Lee is superintendent of the Baldwin County School System, and he said, and this almost makes me wonder which way he votes, if you look at the languages of the world, Arabic certainly would be one of the languages that I would want my own children to learn because of the opportunities it would provide in terms of career and paths of study. I'm very excited about that. I'm sure many parents will want their children to learn Spanish, Mandarin Chinese, Japanese, or Arabic. Jesus Christ! They're offering Mandarin and Japanese and Arabic and Spanish? All right, I'm a snob. I wish they were offering Latin, but, you know, who the hell am I? Brian Heuser is a professor of international education policy at Peabody College at Vanderbilt University. He said, the growth of international businesses in the South is increasing exponentially. Those countries that decide not to learn a language, that decide not to invite immigrants from all parts of the world, are the ones that will fall behind in the global economy. We also know that a lot of folks from the Arab world have relocated here. We need to embrace this new global reality of having a multicultural society. That didn't slow down Donna Reif, who it would appear is probably the mama of Michael Reif, cited above. She's still not happy. She says it's unfair to teach Arabic when public school systems discourage any expression of religion.
If they want to speak their language, that is their privilege in this country. But don't silence another voice such as Christianity. We are not a Muslim nation, and yet they're trying to bring this kind of nonsense into schools. I am absolutely against it. It's a great concern to me because they're being indoctrinated with this. Arabic leads right into the Muslim teaching, and that is where the danger is. And that is what I'm absolutely against. Let them teach that in their mosques, but keep it out of our schools.
Because there is not a single speaker of Arabic in the entire world who is not a Muslim. Except for the fact that that's a great goddamn big lie. So you know how my tiny mind works. I went looking for examples in Arabic. Of course, I had to have it translated into big ol' AAA American, so as we all can understand. I went looking for non-Quranic examples of Arabic. And damned if I didn't go looking and find some straight-up beauty. Maisuna was wife to the Caliph Muawiyah. And she wrote the Song of Maisuna. The russet suit of camel's hair with spirits light and eye serene is dearer to my bosom far than all the trappings of a queen. The humble tent and murmuring breeze that whistles through its fluttering wall, my unaspiring fancy please better than the towers and splendid halls. The tendant colts that bounding fly and frolic by the litter's side are dearer in Maisuna's eye than gorgeous mules in all their pride. The watchdog's voice that bays whene'er a stranger seeks his master's cot sounds sweeter in Maisuna's ear than yonder trumpet's long-drawn note. The rustic youth, unspoilt by art, son of my kindred, poor but free, will ever to Maisuna's heart be dearer, pampered fool, than thee. Damn. See, that's what happens when you go wandering around in the world of literature and poetry and multiculturalism. You find out that, how about that? Hundreds and hundreds of years ago and 8,000 miles away, somebody was taking pleasure in the ordinary the same way we do with a glass of tea at sunrise. Or the Caliph Yazid, who had father issues. They have that in Arabic as well. Must then my failings from the shaft of anger ne'er escape? And dost thou storm because I've quaffed the water of the grape? That I can thus from wine be driven, thou surely ne'er canst think, another reason thou hast given why I resolve to drink. Too sweet the flowing cup to seize, 'tis sweet thy rage to see. At first I drink myself to please, and next to anger thee. No, that's never happened in Western culture. No. Some teenage kid has never gone out and got all liquored up just to watch daddy shit. No.
They're trying to indoctrinate our children.
Sounds to me like there's not a hell of a lot to indoctrinate there.
Hey, y'all. I got $20. Let's go get a case of beer and drink it up, and then go home and watch our parents have a conniption. Sounds good!
We'll drink it from the Caliph Yazid Memorial Beer Bong. And here's some stuff that I wouldn't expect to find in the Quran. To the Caliph Harun al-Rashid, religion's gems can ne'er adorn the flimsy robe by pleasure worn. Its feeble texture soon would tear and give those jewels to the air. Thrice happy they who seek the abode of peace and pleasure in their God, who spurn the world, its joys despise, and grasp at bliss beyond the skies. Abu Tamam Habib, on the other side, apparently had, as ever so many poets, Western and Eastern, have proven, had woman troubles. To my mistress. Ungenerous and mistaken maid, to scorn me thus because I'm poor, canst thou a liberal hand upbraid for dealing round some worthless ore? Despairs the wish of little souls, the great that gather to bestow. Yon current down the mountain rolls and stagnates in the swamp below. God knows how long it would be before Andrew Marvell would come along, and say, had we but whirled enough in time, this coyness lady were no crime. The grave's a fine and quiet place, but none, I think, do there embrace. It's the same thing, but God forbid the children of Baldwin County, and particularly Daphne, Alabama, should learn a little bit about the fact that there are no different races on this planet. There are only human beings, and we have all too common and all too in common failings. And magnificently, occasionally, common urges toward the sublime. You know? This from Robert, in Australia. What language did Jesus speak? You can't be a real Christian unless you speak it. Yeah, that's why they had to have subtitles in The Passion of the Christ, because part of it was done in Latin and the other part was done in Aramaic, and I think there was a little Hebrew thrown in for good measure. Okay, Beth in Texas reminding me, it appears that Conlon's noise about arresting the truckers event is still on. It appears that Conlon's noise about arresting government officials was just that, Conlon's noise. But with him or without him, the plan for a 3-day traffic shutdown is still going forward. Proof of which, in this tweet that Beth sends along. Yeah, they're still doing it. And then this, ride for the Constitution driver instructions from someone calling himself, of course, General Lee. Oh, please. So here we go. Tell us all about it.
Also known as General Lee, rideforthe constitution.org. This is it. Truckers to shut down America. Hashtag T, the number 2, SDA. Need to put that on everything you've got going. What I want to talk to you guys about is organization. You drivers that are actively going to participate in this event October 11th through the 13th. Here's things I need from you. Number one, I need you to register, so to speak. I need you to send an email to drivers at rideforthe constitution.org. That's drivers at rideforthe constitution.org. We need you to register. I need to know your name, contact information, and I need to know what time you are arriving and where you are going to arrive, whether it's the assembly point at exit 98 on I-95 in Virginia, or whether it's at exit 77 on I-81 in Pennsylvania. This is very important, guys. I can't stress how important this is. We're going to run three shifts. We're going to start at 7 a.m. Friday morning. We're going to run 7 to 3, 3 to 11, and 11 to 7. You guys put your preference as to what shift you want, first, second, or third. You'll all have a shot. Now, on Sunday, we want everybody pretty much from noon until. Then we'll discuss and see how many guys want to hang around for a Monday morning traffic jam on the 14th, but we'll talk more about that later. That may or may not be a possibility. But we're going to do this in three shifts, and we're going to stage it. Okay, guys, remember, fuel up completely, and you got to stay legal. We don't want any illegal activity, and none of you guys want tickets or points on your CDL either. I know that. We don't want any incidents and no accidents. We want no negative coverage whatsoever. First thing you got to do,
except it's
if you're
all
planning on being there,
because they're idiots,
is register at drivers and send an email to drivers at rideforthe constitution.org. Drivers at rideforthe constitution.org. And I need your contact information, when you're going to arrive, what shift you want to drive. Guys, we've got the entire country behind us on this.
No,
all
you
don't. The major media is talking about it. All the major, the minor, anybody at all is talking about the truckers that are coming to shut down D.C.
Because you're idiots.
We've got to stand together. We've got to be united. Guys, we got to keep it peaceful. We got to keep it clean. Whether you can bobtail or whether you'll be pulling your trailer, whatever you want to do. Okay? This is Ernest Lee, General Lee, rideforthe constitution.org. Truckers to shut down America. I'm looking forward to meeting each and every one of you guys that I can. By the way, we're going to be using CB channel 15. That is 15. CB channel 15. I'll be there.
Breaker.
Driving
good buddy.
By Dove Gray 2013 Pete 587. Look forward to seeing each and every one of you.
Oh, for pity's sakes. So I guess I can go back to working on that convoy parody. Thanks, Beth. Granny T in Tennessee is feeling a little put off by my long digression on the state of education in Baldwin County, Alabama. Subject line, we're number one. Bob, you're just giving Alistan too much airtime. New study shows Tennessee Stan is number one, most violent state in the whole new United States. Your pitiful little old West Virginia don't even make the top five. Just shows how backwards y'all are. Get with the plan and rev up your truck for the big trip to D.C. And don't forget your firearm. Signed, Granny T. regarding the Daphne, Alabama story, subject line, culture of hate. Hateful Islamophobic jackasses complaining that students learning Arabic in high school equates to learning a culture of hate. Hey, pot, kettle wants to meet you. Signed, Sergey, glasshouse stone thrower Kyle. Thanks, Sergey. Irish Dave noting, those languages lead directly to 3 days of the Condor. Longtime Reds player Johnny Bench was born in Oklahoma, which is sort of Alabama-stan-like. He was an all-star major league catcher, you know. Thank you, Randy. Randy in PA sending me an email in Cyrillic, in Cyrillic Russian. You know, I'd be okay if they just stayed with the Greek letters. I could actually dope it out. But those funky made-up Russian noises, no luck. No luck. Done. Maybe I'll get a translation now. So we are halfway through the program for the evening. And that means it's time to take a break. Open up the phone lines. You know the number. 304-658-3333. The Skype line is wide open. Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Jump right in any old time. Oh, by the way, thank you, Sparky. Chat room moderator Sparky sending me a note. The salt... Okay, now we know. Salt stealing Michelle Obama. Headline, Michelle Obama urges food companies to cut the fat, salt, and sugar. Really? This is what gets the little teabag freaks cut down on the salt? What, you don't like having granddad around for an extra 7 years or so, maybe? No, grandpap, put on another handful. Oh, the stupid. It hurts as us. I gotta get Ferg to come in and actually cut that as a clip. He did that so well, that little Gollum piece. So we'll take a break. Light up the phone lines. If you're already on hold, please stay there. Green News Report's coming up with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And we'll be back. We're making some headway. Thank you very much to Ed and Philip and Kate for the kind contributions. Thank you kindly. And Sal, thank you. I want to make sure I mention everybody. So, break time. And remember, if you haven't, jump over to headonradionetwork.com, get the instructions, and please nominate this program and Dr. Bill's program for a podcast award, the People's Choice People's Podcast Awards. It's much appreciated. All right. We'll be back. Conversation radio is what we do here. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's Tuesday, October 8th, 2013.
From virtually all corners today, it has been called the worst winter storm in more than a decade.
Government shutdown doesn't stop record blizzard in Upper Midwest.
Energy is the solution to climate change.
Making the economic case for climate action. Climate change denial industry suing academics again. Plus, accidental power outage at Fukushima, but at least we know the backup systems are working.
All of those accidents and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I know that when people talk about climate change, eyes still glaze over.
Hate to break it to you, John Kerry. It's not climate change, it's you. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, before the news, some very quick business. Our thanks to listener Nickname, spelled with an N-Y at the beginning, on the Twitters, for helping us find and solve a problem we've had with our iTunes subscription feed. So thanks to Nickname and our affiliate partners AM960 KNEW up in San Francisco. Hopefully, iTunes subscriptions of the Green News Report are now going to be automatically downloaded to our subscribers again.
Awesome!
Now, I've got a lot of climate deniers on my Twitter feed again, saying, hey, Brad, what happened to your global warming, and pointing to the fact that there is a snowstorm up in South Dakota. So I guess global warming is canceled because it's snowing, Desi Doyen?
No, of course not. Of course it's still going to snow. It's the extreme weather impact that climate scientists have been warning about, and this is indeed an extreme storm. The government shutdown did not stop this record-breaking storm from slamming into South Dakota. 55 inches of snow hit some areas from this unusually early season blizzard. The government shutdown didn't stop meteorologists of the National Weather Service, who hiked through the blizzard to work without pay to monitor this record-breaking storm. The storm killed 4 people and thousands of cattle and obliterated the one-day snowfall record and the record for the entire month of October for snowfall in Rapid City, South Dakota, and spawned several rare autumn tornadoes around the upper Midwest, including one EF4 in rural Nebraska. That's the highest possible rating. Luckily, it was in a rural area, so no one was hurt.
All of that in the first week of October.
Right. Climate scientists say human-caused global warming is driving the observed increase in record extreme weather events.
The extreme weather around the world, the flooding, the fires, the drought, the intense storms are nothing compared to what will come if we don't act.
That was U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry at the Asian Pacific Economic Summit on Monday on the need for urgent international action to address climate change, but he focused on the economic opportunities in launching a global clean energy revolution.
Staring us in the face is an economic revolution that could solve all of this. There is a $6 trillion market out there for energy with 6 billion to 9 billion additional users. And that is the marketplace of all time.
I'm sorry, I have been told that taking action on climate change is something we cannot afford. It will break the bank. It's better to just turn the other way and hope for the best.
Which is just silly.
Well, apparently the fossil fuel industry feels differently, Desi Doyen.
Speaking of the fossil fuel industry, in Florida, the industry's upsetting the neighbors. How would you feel if you got a flyer on your door with the title, Evacuation Plan in Case of Explosion? That was the first notice for residents in Naples, Florida, that an oil company will be drilling an oil well 1,000 feet from their homes. Not only does Florida have no rules regulating how close oil companies can drill next to your home, there are also no laws requiring disclosure informing you they're coming to drill next to your home.
So they should be happy that they were told, at least, that there could be an explosion next to their home.
Exactly. The climate change denial industry is up to its old trick of harassing climate scientists. A nonprofit front group funded by the fossil fuel industry is now suing the University of Arizona to obtain the personal emails of climate scientists employed by the university. Previously, a judge struck down a similar attempt by Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli, who's now running for governor, to use the same harassment lawsuit technique against climate scientist Michael Mann. Luckily, Cuccinelli failed.
And he may well fail in his run for governor. A recent poll shows that voters in Virginia are very concerned about climate change, and they don't like Ken Cuccinelli's position or his witch hunt against scientists.
Finally, some good news from Japan's stricken Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant.
Well, that's a strange turn of phrase.
Plant officials admit that over the weekend, a worker accidentally shut off the cooling systems, keeping the four damaged reactors from a catastrophic meltdown.
That's the good news.
But luck prevailed, and the backup generators kicked in. So, hey, good news. The backup system works.
Finally, some good news out of Fukushima, although admittedly the bar has gotten pretty low.
Yeah.
For much more on that story and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Download us at iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn. Find us and like us on the Facebook and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Cool down.
And about 11 minutes before the hour on this Titanic Tuesday, and I think we have certainly laid out some true Titanic intellect here. And with that, let's go to some actual intellect and go to the phones. 304-658-3333 is the number, and on the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn. Either way works fine. Here we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, Jim, what's happening?
Just listening to your opening statements and things of that nature.
Yeah, the filibuster.
Yeah. And, number one, I saw on the internet that that thing for October 11th had been canceled.
Well, no, that story was put out, but now there's, stuff to the contrary. Apparently, maybe they had some sort of internal, coup or something, but maybe Conlon's out, but the rest of these goobers are going forward.
Well, let them go forward, and they can take their lot blizzards with them. So they ought to have a good party somewhere at some truck stop, because I don't think much is going to come of it, to tell you the truth. I think these guys are on the road to make money, and they have obligations to their employers and things of that nature, and you know, truck drivers drive on like an individual contract basis, you know what I'm saying? And I don't think it's going to...
Yeah, I'd say these guys are independents.
Well, yeah, they're independent, but I really...
That means they don't have enough common sense to join a union.
Well, exactly. And as far as blocking 495 is concerned, they can forget about that.
Well, you and I both know... We both know D.C., and I've probably had a little more experience with D.C. traffic more recently than you, but I don't think it was ever a bed of roses. How are you going to slow down I-495?
You can't.
It's a parking lot already, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, just if you don't believe it, just stand on one of the overpasses and count the number of cars that go by with a stopwatch in 60 seconds. That'll tell you something right there. I mean, I could just see him getting across the Woodrow Wilson Bridge, if it still exists. I believe that was one of the remaining bridges left on the interstate system, is it not? They had to rebuild that.
Yeah,
of course it still exists. They completely redid it. My God, I can remember the first time I ever crossed it. I didn't know if I was going to get across that thing. That was a long time ago. And you can remember our conversations about going across, what's it called, the Nice Bridge across the Potomac? The two-laner?
Yeah.
That's a real thrill seeker, isn't it?
Oh, well, I mean, I don't do a whole lot on the Beltway itself. I usually shoot in on 66 and...
Well, this is down, you know, on Route 5 going town toward, you know, in Maryland. But there's one bridge over. It's like a roller coaster. It's called the Nice Bridge. And if you can drive over that thing without any type of fear and trepidation, you are definitely welcome to try any of the roller coaster rides in any theme park in the world.
because at that point you're a past master.
Oh, God. I can remember the first time I ever went over it, I thought to myself, I'm not going to be able to do this. But I said, look, you got a cat here in the front seat with you. He can't drive, and your ass sure as hell better drive. And I got over.
Climb or die, Jim.
Huh?
Climb or die.
Absolutely. Fleer, you know, it's a fight or flight. And so you have to fight. But nonetheless, I don't think these people are going to do anything of any significance. They do, it'll surprise me.
You may be surprised.
I hope not.
There is no real expressing how many. Because Jim, the success of the teabaggery is that it has been able to leverage massive numbers of stupid people.
Well, that's not the first place in our history when that's happened, Bob. And you see where it all ends up. It is on the dust heap of the, you know, in the dustbin of history. I'm being optimistic here. Now, you can be a pessimist if you want to. That's fine. I understand your position, but I don't think it's going to account for very much. I really don't. I certainly hope not.
Well, I'd like to see.
I would like to see them make absolute fools of themselves and that idiot who you played.
All they have to do is get up in the morning to do that, Jim.
Well, I know that, but hell, a lot of people have to do is get up in the morning to make idiots of themselves, that's for sure. I enjoyed the music. Who was that?
That was Sting from an album several years ago called Brand New Day. 1999 it came out, and the song is Desert Rose with a Lebanese artist named Cheb Mami, M-A-M-I.
I'd heard it somewhere before, but I couldn't quite place it.
Oh, I think it's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's very.
For all I know, he's singing. I need a new refrigerator, but it's. Well, I mean, there's something haunting, or maybe it's haunting only to the Western ear, but there's something haunting about those tones and the way they string music together. And the same thing applies with music from anything except Western tonic scales, humans don't necessarily perceive music the same way.
No, we don't, and it's good that we have exposure to other types. And I've certainly had a lot of exposure to different types of music in my life, and I've certainly benefited from it. And you know, just as I emailed you earlier, when I was a small child, the first books that were read to me, the first tales for children, were The Arabian Nights, based on
Scheherazade.
Well, Richard Burton Speke, who translated that whole thing.
Yeah.
And The City of Brass, Aladdin and His Magic Lamp, and so many others. And I was so fascinated by these things, much more so, actually, when I was a kid, than, you know, the Brothers Grimm, of which I was exposed to. But the Arabian Nights, which were read to me by my mother, God bless her.
Indeed.
They were really incredibly crafted, beautiful experiences and descriptions of objects and cities and all types of little stories and things that were going on. You know, Ali Baba and his 40 thieves and that type of thing. And, of course, you know, the wicked sorcerer who led him into the cave and opened Sesame and stuff like that. That's the stuff I remember when I was just a child.
And there's history involved here, too, because whether it's 1001 Arabian Nights and the story of Scheherazade spinning her yarns, or the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam.
Absolutely.
Or the poetry of Rumi. I've got a copy of Rumi around here somewhere, and I can just open it up and have my mind blown, because it is so timeless that it is neither ancient nor modern. I guess that's what makes it timeless. But it is absolutely relevant.
It is. Look at Scheherazade. Okay, let's take that for example. The world, the girl who was supposed to keep herself alive by telling a tale that wouldn't end. And guess what Rimsky-Korsakov did with it? One of the most beautiful pieces of music in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's one example. And I can cite for, well, I can't cite for lack of time here, many other instances of things of that nature.
And the other night we were talking, was it you and I? And I mentioned something about 1453.
Yeah, Constantinople.
Well, consider what happened. Yeah, Constant and Eugene Finnerman is an absolute authority on all things Byzantine. But he expressed to me one time that he doubts that there would actually be even a city there at this time had the forces of Mohammed II not overrun Constantinople in May 1453.
Well, I don't doubt that because the government there, you know, the very term Byzantine has a real negative impact on any type of political doctrine.
Yeah, it had reduced itself to an inability to function.
Exactly. I mean, you know, Byzantine, I mean, the politics were so Byzantine. I mean, how many emperors did they have like in 100 years? Must have been 50 or something. I mean, you had one coming in every 2 years and another one went out. And
and they were really, really, they went to great ends to creatively torture and kill each other. Ears cut off, noses bisected, eyes put out.
Well, there were lots of ugly things that went on back then, that's for sure. And
but if Constantinople does not fall in 1453, all of that, so ever so much of that transmitted wisdom that comes down through the ages, and forms the seeds, and of course you can't overlook the Venetian Levantine trade, or the Genoese Levantine trade, all of those things, and of course then there's the Black Plague, all of those things are transmitted as a result of contact with Asian and Arabic culture.
It was to our benefit, that's for sure. My dad used to just recite when I was a kid over and over to me, "Why did Constantinople get the works? That's nobody's business but the Turks."
Exactly, and that gets translated into a song that I played here on the program a few weeks back called Istanbul, Not Constantinople, by a brilliant, brilliant band called They Might Be Giants.
Yeah.
That's nobody's business but the Turks.
That's right. I had one contact with that part of the world. I think that was when I have a plane change. It was what was the airport called? Yasukoy?
The one at
Istanbul.
Yeah.
Yasukoy. Yeah. And but nonetheless, you know, Turkish the exposure of the Turks and the Arabian culture definitely was to our benefit. I mean, through the influences of the sciences, medicine, algebra, and stuff like that, because these people were living in clean, well-lit, beautiful cities, while we were scrambling around in drafty, ugly castles, and it was just one step up from almost barbarism.
I don't think that, I think we can get rid of the almost, and we'll be just fine, Jim. I mean, consider that the Knights of St. John, who later became known as the Hospitallers during the Crusades, the Knights of St. John learned the idea that it might be possible to keep infection and all those vicissitudes from being visited upon injured Crusaders by simply engaging in a little bit of cleanliness. The Arabs were bathing wounds in wine.
Mm-hmm.
When the barbarian Western Europeans were trying to cast out demons and looking for black bile.
I mean, there were medical treatises that were written. There were mathematical things and other types of very cultured and highly well known and scientifically based things that came from this part of the world. So our contact through the Crusades or initially was much to our benefit, probably much less to the benefit of the Arabs who had to receive a lot of this stuff that went down there. But nonetheless, it created, you know, a new world out of the Middle Ages. And that's when, you know, spices and other types of foods and
Not to mention navigation itself, Jim, because...
Navigation and mathematics, like
Prince Henry the Navigator and all the, you know, because the Portuguese started that process, and they did so based upon maps that they had gotten from the Arab world.
Mm-hmm. Had a huge thing at Sagres in Portugal. As a matter of fact, you can still see one of the outlying fields of the navigation compass that Prince Henry set up. So there were a lot of good things that happened. And even when the Arabs came into Spain and stuff like that, they were tolerant of anybody as long as they, number one, kept peace, and number two, paid the tax. They could go to any type of religion they wanted to. The Arabs weren't going to worry them about it. Or at least that's the way I understand it.
And that's the way it worked.
If I'm wrong, please correct me.
No. There was at one point in time, one of the caliphs in Baghdad had as his chief advisor a well-respected Jewish scholar.
Absolutely. And, you know...
And I think, what is this, the 12th century, maybe?
Yeah, but the trouble is, when the thing after Charles Martel and this, that, and the other drove the Moors out, then you had the reestablishment of a lot of things, the conversos and how they treated those people. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that Christianity of that time was certainly a lot less tolerant and totally intolerant, because basically what they did bring them with them was the Inquisition. Whereas, to my knowledge, and I might be wrong here, and I'm inviting anybody to correct me, the Arabs, like I say, were interested in paying the tax and staying out of trouble.
Maintaining a functional civil society.
Maintaining a functional civil society. And these people were extremely far advanced. They were erudite. They had so much in their culture. And it's incredible for me to understand that there are people who cannot understand it, accept it, and mainly, at least, if you don't do those two things, appreciate it.
The appreciating part is not the at least, Jim. The appreciating part is the insurmountable hurdle for mouth-breathing knuckle walkers like these people that I was reading about down in Daphne, Alabama. They're scared to death of it. I mean, this is actually worse. I mean, granted, when the First Crusade was proclaimed, it was death to the infidel, but the people who were doing the bloody business of butchery suddenly realized they were up against a culture that was every bit their equal and quite possibly their superior.
Well, let them do what they want to, but let them be reminded of this. And the moving finger writes, and having writ moves on, and nor all your piety, nor all your wit, will change a single word of it, nay, cancel half a line. So I offer that to those ignorant bastards as an admonishment to what they are trying to do and how it's going to impact upon them negatively and their children and their children's children. I think Omar Khayyam definitely had some beautiful things to say.
Without a doubt. I've got the Rubaiyat called up in front of me right now, and I was going to share some with folks here in a moment. But we should add a caveat to that, Jim, because, well, I believe in giving credit where credit is due. The Rubaiyat, as I understand it, was composed in Persian, Farsi.
Mm-hmm.
As were, I think, was Rumi in Persian, or was he in a Turkic dialect?
I'm not sure. The only thing I've done is to read them in translation. I do not have...
Wouldn't it be magnificent to have the skills to not... I mean, am I wrong, or are you, or have you been fluent in Russian?
I know enough Russian to get by, and
know enough Russian to get in trouble.
Enough Russian to get in trouble, and Bob, if you don't use these skills daily, you lose them.
Sure.
Particularly with the onset of age, and when you're dealing with a number one, a Cyrillic alphabet, number two, in addition to translation, there is transliteration. But fortunately, at least for me, there have been so many wonderful things in Russian that have been translated by Constance Bennett and people like that, or Garnet, I'm not sure. Excuse me. You'll have to excuse my memory on that. Like I've told you before, the little gray cells do not work so well as they used to. But nonetheless, the effect of their language and the effect of their poetry and the effect of their novels was certainly not lost upon me.
And I know from having a friend long now having who is now since gone from this mortal coil, he told me that no matter how beautiful any translation of any Russian literature is in English, that it cannot compare with the native tongue.
Exactly. And Russians are people who really appreciate language. They appreciate their poets. They appreciate their novelists. And they appreciate their historians, particularly if they can get one who can really write what happened. But as far as novels...
And not be sent to the Lubyanka for his trouble?
Or to some place in, well, Siberia or Karaganda or wherever. But nonetheless, Russians love poets. Poets to them are as popular to them as football players and major stars are to us.
Well, let's make that inquiry real quick since we've gone off down this garden path and it is in the way of conversation to do such things. Why is it that in Russian culture, do you suppose, that they do cherish a poet? And I think it's part of the same mindset that makes them avid just chess fanatics, or am I oversimplifying and stereotyping?
You know, Bob, I wish I could answer that. The Russian spirit and the Russian soul is tied to the land, and they love their land, they love their country, and they love the people who can speak about it and write about it, and they love situations that are depicted in their plays by Chekhov, in their music by the mighty Russian Five, whether it's Tchaikovsky, whether it's Balakirev, whether it's Kui, or so many other wonderful Russian composers. I mean, they're just incredible. And I think they have not been distracted as so much by frivolous things, because they've had to deal with some really serious things, much more than we in our history. I mean, for example, we have not been invaded, I don't know how many times, by, you know, different nationalities, as the Russians were spoken of by the poet Yevtushenko. And he basically, when I met him, I actually met him at a reading, and I had his biography called a Precocious Biography. It wasn't the one they were selling on the concourse of the Coliseum where the lecture took place, but it was one that I had since 1964. This was 1972. And when he looked at it, he just gave me the biggest bear hug, in spite of those strange men who were around suits surrounding him. But nevertheless, it was a wonderful lecture, and I think they appreciate their poetry and their authors because they haven't had the distractions and things, or shall we say, they can appreciate beauty. And they can appreciate simplicity. Because a Russian will tell you about life. He said, you know, to live life is not as easy as crossing a field. That means a lot to a peasant. That means a lot to anybody who thinks about it. And I think we have become a little more frivolous and not quite as depth.
Oh, no. I think you're being overly kind, Jim. We, as American culture, is shallower than rain on a parking lot.
Well, it's the depth of the people and the depth of the people and their love for their homeland and their appreciation for it and their determination to persevere and to fight for it and to.
But my position is that American culture is as shallow as it is, not because we are shallow. Because we are, after all, a melting pot of fascinating peoples, but because we have had that shallowness imposed upon us.
I can agree with that. I can agree with that because the shallowness basically is connected with money and stuff like that.
I have two books here, and they're old and yellowing, and they belong to my grandfather, who was born in 1894, along with my grandmother. And one of them is The Notebook of Elbert Hubbard. and the other is The Scrapbook of Elbert Hubbard. And anybody who wants to look him up will find him a fascinating fellow, possibly a bit authoritarian, but a thinker of some sort. And my mother tells me stories of how her father would sit and pore over those books. He was certainly capable of reading other books and read many other books. This was a house and remains a house of books. But
I'm well acquainted with that environment. I live in one.
Yeah, well, exactly. And my great grandfather, my grandmother's father, I still have his Bible, carefully annotated in the margins.
I'm sure it's very interesting.
And he was a farmer. No coal mines for him.
He was a peasant.
I guess you would say so, yes.
I say your grandfather may have graduated to the rank of kulak.
Possibly. He left Carroll County, Virginia. He was born in 1865. He shows up in the rolls of the county jail of 1880 in Carroll County, Virginia, and in 1885, he and his brother leave Carroll County, Virginia, and he settles here. His brother settles in what is Braxton County. His brother went on to be a state senator, among other things, but Ozias was happy to be a farmer on a hillside, and he grew magnificent orchards and beautiful grape arbors, raised all of his corn and all of his wheat, and his little house still stands. And he had a chair in which he would sit at the end of the day, and he had a cut glass goblet in which his wife would mix him up a glass of warm sugar water, and there were always three or four apples sitting on a little handmade shelf nailed to the wall above his chair, and he would sit with his children gathered around him, and people who, for instance, would like to see that family can go to my Facebook page. It's the photograph that serves as my Facebook page photo, and see that little house and that little family, and they would gather around him, and he would read to them out of the Bible of the evening, drink his warm sugar water, peel apples and hand out, core it and hand out slices to his children, and then take his banjo down and play them music before bed.
Well, I'm certain that it was quite, number one, instructive, number two, entertaining. You know, what can I say? I can't imagine that because I've never really heard a banjo tune. Well, I've heard banjos and stuff like that, but you know, we all come.
Well, I'm one of those who holds to the old maxim that the difference between an onion and a banjo is that nobody cries when you cut up a banjo. But it had to be special when Ogoad would do it, and apparently that was the rhythm of his life.
Well, take a balalaika. Now, I can think of no more beautiful music that can come from a balalaika than anything in the world. It's a beautiful instrument, and people who can play it well can absolutely melt your heart, and perhaps they can certainly help you understand the Russian soul. That one instrument right there, the balalaika. Think about that. Now, there's another one that Rimsky-Korsakov was all upset about. He was very nervous and frivolous, as were composers. And one was the Celeste. It was used in certain types of themes written by Tchaikovsky, and heard about in the Nutcracker. But nonetheless, it was Rimsky-Korsakov was absolutely scared to death that Tchaikovsky would be able to use this before he would in some of his stuff. But nonetheless, that's just a digression. But when you mentioned the banjo, the first thing that came to my memory was the balalaika. And I've heard so many beautiful songs played on that, and in the native Russian language. And even though I could not understand a lot of what they were saying, I can see it in their faces, I could see it in the cast of their eyes and just the whole attitude of everyone who was in that particular group.
Well, I tell you, the one thing I realize is that the older I get chronologically, the more yearning I am filled with, and I've remarked and I've become convinced of this, Jim. The human lifespan is far too short.
It is indeed.
And the world not large enough, or the world too large, for one life to encompass it.
But let me quote to you Canto 51 of Eugene Onegin by Pushkin. It's only a several lines. The two of us have planned to wander on foreign shores to feast our eyes. But I'm here. He is yonder. Fate has decreed it otherwise. And that is a very poignant thing to me and a very personal statement in my past life with this individual who meant a great deal to me. And on that note, my friend, I'm going to let you go so somebody else can get on this line. And I want to say one other thing. Juanita, such a kind, beautiful voice. The most beautiful voice I've heard on this network.
Oh, Juanita from Ohio?
Right.
From a couple of nights ago, yes.
Yes. And I just, you know, she is just the type of thing that you person that you could see as a mother or as a nurse or as a caregiver or as an angel, the way she speaks. And I want to compliment her on that, if I may.
Well, thank you, Jim. That's mighty kind.
No, it's not kind. It's true.
That, too.
All right, sir.
All right. You have a good night, Jim.
Back at you.
Bye now. Our buddy Jim. I'm going to go back to the phones in just a second, but I want to get into the email bag real quick, too. Regarding things Arabic, Philip says, frankly, I salute the effort to keep Arabic out of our schools. Had it happened 40 years ago, I would never have been subjected to algebra or algorithms, had to learn what an albatross was and why it was hung on the neck of the ancient mariner, drunk too much alcohol in college, or been subjected to other distressing Arabic impositions on our English language. For that matter, my daughters would not have had to learn Spanish because, frankly, Bob, it contains enough Arabic to make them bowers to Mecca after a single lesson. The way I look at it, it's all a necessary effort to preserve our beleaguered Christian faith. I've read the King James Bible and believe if English was good enough for our Lord Jesus Christ, then it's good enough for me. By the way, when I wanted to study both French and Latin in public high school, I was told I couldn't because I had no linguistic aptitude. My father forked the money out to pay a pittance to add to my aid that enabled me to attend a college preparatory school, and 4 years later I graduated cum laude with a diploma for a major in French and German, and had also worked a couple of semesters in Spanish and Old English into my four-year studies. Imagine what I might have done had I had an aptitude to learn foreign languages. Be well, Philip. Gatekeepers. We don't think he's got an aptitude for it. And by the way, I might note that Ferg is thus far maintaining a 104 average in Spanish. I don't know the quality of the Spanish instruction up at this little attempt at a high school that he attends, but I'm proud of a 104 in just about any damn thing. Ed writes in on the subject of Obamacare. Ed says, my wife just had a cancer scare. I'm on the hook for over $12,000. Her radiation therapy is estimated at $6,000. Our insurance will only pay 60% of out-of-network care. I wanted to give her the best care possible. We can afford this, but I can't believe for the life of me that many others who can pay out-of-pocket for doctors, oncologists, and radiology, that there are that many of them. Many will go into debt for a loved one, knowing that it will be a financial death knell. I will love and tend to my beautiful wife. She needs to know that I will always be there while showing that she is more and more precious to me every day. We eloped in our early 20s and raised a family. Our marriage is a conversation that has never ended. As we approach our 50s, the fact facing us is that we will rely on health care so we can spend our time together, then concluding our lives in love and peace. Today, I witnessed an elderly woman being shaken down for cash before she could get her treatment. She wrote a check, and the clerk ran the draft through a scanning device. It was approved. The look on the lady's face made me want to find a way to stop this silent violence against the poor and senior citizens. We need to support the Affordable Care Act and push for a single-payer system so this capitalist wet dream will end. Wet dream indeed. Thank you. Signed, Ed. No need to thank me, Ed. Thank you. Ed uses the phrase capitalist wet dream. And, you know, that is so apropos because murderous acts are often referred to as wet work. This is that. This is absolutely that. Thank you, Jack. Jack just kicked in, and that puts us a total of $45 beyond the evening's fundraising goal of $150. And taking a little bite out of the hole. A little spade of earth into the hole, so maybe we can start looking up over the top of it, because the echo can be hell. And I told Jim that I had the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam before me, and I am going right back to the phones. 304-658-3333 is the number. I do. I get so goddamned offended when I hear the voice of ignorance raising its bray above the civilized refrain of discourse, the idea that there would even be a remote possibility that these likely teabaggers, these fundamentalist evangelical Christians, would be able to stop children from being able to learn Arabic? Are they out there raising hell about the teaching of Chinese because, you know, that's what the commies speak? Well, no, I suppose the Chinese are now sufficiently capitalist that they're actively poisoning things like infant formula and pet food, so they're probably safe now. But the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam, which I do think was written in Persian, but nonetheless, I'm sure there would be an equal hissy to be had if Farsi, which, by the way, has distant kindred roots to English. No, really. Arabic doesn't. Farsi does. Just like some of the Indian languages. Wake, for the sun, who scattered into flight the stars before him, from the field of night drives night along with them from heaven, and strikes the sultan's turret with a shaft of light. Before the phantom of false morning died, methought a voice within the tavern cried, when all the temple is prepared within, why nods the drowsy worshipper outside? And as the cock crew, those who stood before the tavern shouted, open then the door. You know how little while we have to stay, and once departed may return no more. Now the new year reviving old desires, the thoughtful soul to solitude retires, where the white hand of Moses on the bough puts out, and Jesus from the ground suspires. Hiram indeed is gone with all his rose, and Jamshid's seven-ringed cup where no one knows. But still a ruby gushes from the vine, and many a garden by the water blows. And David's lips are locked, but in divine high-piping Pahlavi, with wine, 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 red wine, the nightingale cries to the rose, that sallow cheek of hers to incarnadine. Come, fill the cup, and in the fire of spring your winter garment of repentance fling. The bird of time has but a little way to flutter, and the bird is on the wing. Whether at Nashapur or Babylon, whether the cup with sweet or bitter run, the wine of life keeps oozing drop by drop. The leaves of life keep falling one by one. Can't have the children of Daphne High School, Alabama, learning any of that deviant Sharia law inducing Arabic. Betsy pointing out that 50% of Hebrew native Israeli children study Arabic as their third language. They all have to have a third language and about 3 years of it to graduate high school. And we feel like we've got children on the path of knowledge if we can give them a year or two of poorly instructed Spanish. You know, you can tie so much of this into so many different aspects. Here I sit, and had I but world enough and time, we're back to that again, nothing would please me more than to get fluent in every language I could get my hand on, and to get fluent by doing it the best way, hearing it spoken in the lands where it is the native tongue. I don't know if a 500-year human lifespan would be enough, but it would be a hell of a lot better start than this. Because in so many ways, our short little lives that Shakespeare said was rounded with a sleep, by being short, is the source of so much of the sorrows of the whole wide world. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Interesting show tonight.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill.
Except, you guys got my goat a little bit. First of all, you had to go tell that if English was good enough for Jesus line. Man, I was sitting on that waiting for that. Because I first saw that or heard that probably as far back as age 15, which was quite a while ago. Because there was a lot of humor making the rounds about...
Well, that's funny to you and me and the rest of the Horn Family Commune, but it's very much a reality for no small number of evangelical fundamentalists.
Well, that's what really gets your goat, of course. It is real to some people. And on the other hand, you guys are totally correct on what the Middle Eastern people brought to the world. Thank you for the algebra, folks. I had to go learn that. I failed it in high school, and when I went for the high school equivalency exam, I had to go buy a book, Algebra for, you know, Mathematics for Adults or Algebra for Adults, and it went down fast. It wasn't that hard at all. Geometry and me never got along. As far as drawing stuff, I couldn't draw flies at a picnic, Bob, artistically. I had no talent whatsoever. Forget that. My mind was all in music, and I hate to tell you how many times I've kicked myself in the ass over the years for not sticking with a clarinet young, because I loved the New Orleans clarinet players and
all the way up to and including Pete Fountain. And
yeah, through, and then there was, I just heard a piece, I forget the guy's name, I thought it was Albert Eiler, who was a modernist, and he did a piece on a clarinet that the New Orleans guys used to do, a blues called Make Me a Pallet on the Floor. And I heard it on a jazz program in college, and I couldn't say, who the hell's singing that? And then they told me whoever it was that damaged one of his hands, he was a sax player. And damn it, he was a modern sax player. It bugged me. I can't remember who it was. That shit happens. But now we'll get into the other part of it where I really break discussion ranks. You talked about Spain.
Yeah.
How did the Arabs and the Middle Easterners or the North Africans, let's put it what it was, North Africans, were they invited into Spain by the people who lived there?
No.
It was war. And the...
war is a broad term.
Yeah.
if you get serious about the study of the ancient world, and by the ancient world we largely mean the Mediterranean.
Yeah,
there was invasion and conquest. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But it is a process. All the way up to and including the Byzantine Empire, who considered themselves Rome, by the way. They didn't say, "Oh, no, that was Rome, and this is the Byzantine
Empire." Sure, I mean, remember, I was Catholic, Bob. I got a load of that stuff.
Yeah, so that was still Rome, but they ebbed and they flowed, or they ebbed and they, you know, the tide came in, the tide went out. They were strong, then they were weak.
Yeah.
At one point in time, there was a mass migration. I think it was the Vandals. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think it was the Vandals who went all the way through Europe, down through the Iberian Peninsula,
yep,
and crossed into North Africa at Gibraltar.
Yeah, and they were,
and then started spreading westward.
Yeah.
And feel free to correct me if it wasn't the Vandals. But this, you know, these are parts, and that's why I brought this up in the context of things like that article in Rolling Stone, Goodbye Miami.
Yeah.
We have not seen, on this continent, mass human migration on the scale that Europe and Asia have known. And all one has to do is study the ancient world, and one will realize that the single greatest precipitator of warfare and human disaster is the necessity that a great number of people, either by choice or by necessity, start going somewhere else.
Yeah.
And as Mr. Gibson notes in the chat room, climate change may change that, and that being the idea that we haven't seen mass migrations in this country or on this continent. Well, I mean, Mexico has seen some mass migrations, and it's northward, and those were once again economically imposed upon people.
Well, if you're a Native American, your people have seen mass migrations.
Oh, absolutely. The ancient ancestors of the people who went on to become the Lakota, their graves 10,000 years old, just a couple of years ago, were dug up in entirely by accident. It was a construction site. Were dug up entirely by accident in Logan County, West Virginia.
Yeah.
And the genetics were done, and then under the Native Repatriation Act, they were turned over to Lakota people for proper interment according to Lakota tradition. But they were genetically, they were genetically traceable. And so yeah, there and the Anishinaabe origin tales, oral history, if you will, concerns the migration across from Turtle Island. All of and that's, you know, that's why they are, that explains why they are who they are.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah.
And we even have our own, Bill.
Yeah.
You know, pilgrims in search of religious freedom.
And people who, after World War II, this country really dispersed. The West Coast, well, the Depression set a lot of people moving. And I was lucky to be playing in Knoxville one night about 6-7 years ago, one of the few times I ventured my ass out of the city to play. Some guy needed a harp player and a singer. I said, I'll do it. Money was okay. And there was a Cherokee convention in the area. And I had a chance to talk to a few of the folks in the bar about what they were doing there, because they were happy to tell you. And I listened. People have something to say. But my problem with the Middle East is, I would say that Vienna is a long way from Istanbul. And by the way, a version of that song came out in the 50s. You can look that one up. Istanbul, Constantinople. It was like the four somebodies, you know, one of those vocal groups.
Yeah.
When I was a kid. But look, you know, what do you think the Islamic army from Turkey, and I shouldn't say Islamic, because leaders will grab everybody and they'll hold up the cause of religion and use the hell out of them to go see something from somebody else. Religion is religion in the wrong hands. I don't care what religion it is, if it gets in the hands of somebody who's looking to profit by it, there's somebody there, they find it's a good way to make a buck if they misuse the whole idea. And I was there's a good book on the Crusades that I read, and I had
Hell, I read a thing on the First Crusade when I was maybe in the sixth grade, and my God, the streets of Jerusalem ran with blood the day the Crusaders took it over.
Yeah.
And they deserved to be thrown out, because what the hell were they doing there? This was, you know, this was not their league, or not their nation, not their nationality. There was no reason for them to be there except those two things, M and P, money and power.
Well, that and the ancient feudal structure itself, which had not collapsed under its own weight yet, because the Black Death had not come.
Oh yeah.
But you know, they created the Kingdom of Jerusalem, and they created a sort of proto nation state called the l'Outre-mer. If I'm even getting close to the O-U-T-R.
I never heard of that. I knew about the Frankish Kingdom of Jerusalem.
Well, and it was, and that was the name of the larger polity, O-U-T-R-E-M-E-R. And what it was a European-style state that was brutally imposed upon an area that was already peopled by folks who had been living there for some several thousands of years. And while they were able to cling to it for about 200 years, it eventually collapsed under its own weight when the European sponsors were no longer able to prop it up. And then it was overrun by a series of various and sundry caliphates. And
Saracens was a popular name.
Yeah, yeah.
Who was the guy?
Saracens, Sassanids, eventually the Turks come along.
Yeah.
And
the leader of the Saracens who made a big name for himself historically?
Oh, Saladin?
Saladin, that's the guy, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the Turkish Empire, Bob, I mean, twice they reached the city, the outskirts of Vienna. One time the King of Poland had to come down and beat them back. I mean, and I hate to say it, but Vienna's a long way from Istanbul. So if somebody was looking for something, I say this is human nature.
Well, it's human nature, and it's also a little bit of quid pro quo.
Yes.
You want to send your fine, God-fearing, upstanding armies of Christ down there, down into our real estate? Well, guess what?
We can do it.
We got maps, and we know how to march, too.
Yeah, and in fact, they would kidnap kids, and, you know, you've heard of the Janissaries or Janissaries?
Sure.
You know, supposedly, from what I've read, they were...
Kidnapped Christian males who were raised Muslim.
Trained.
And trained to be the most effective, brutal infantry ever known.
And, of course, the word assassin.
The Hashashins?
Yeah.
And the old man of the mountain?
Yeah, there's all this history that... Hell, Bob, the problem is Americans don't know their own history, much less anybody else's.
Well, my problem is that the ancient stuff... Well, perhaps I should back up on that, Bill. All of history feels like day before yesterday to me.
Yeah, you and me both.
And I can read about the Gallic campaigns of Caesar. But one of the things that I credit to my ongoing attempt to be mature is that where the first time I read Caesar, you know, you're reading Caesar and Caesar's writing in the third person. Then Caesar did this. Then Caesar did that. And there was much rejoicing. Blah blah blah. And you're thinking, man, that Caesar's a stud.
Yeah.
And they
have you believe that, yes.
But you get a little bit older and you start wishing that there was some way, and the only way there is to try to parse it out of the primary sources that we do have and get at least a view of what it must have been like for the people being invaded. And for me, that little light went on, Bill, when I realized that the people being invaded were my people.
Yeah.
See, there are a lot of folks out there. You know, if you're, for instance, if you're Italian.
Well, that was a land of invasion back and forth too.
Sure, but if you're Italian, you can go back to for instance, what we understand of the religion of the ancient and customs of the ancient Etruscans.
Yep.
The rise of Rome, the expansion of Rome, the Latin League, all of that, and then Christianity gets superimposed upon it, and Christianity is what takes out Jove and Minerva, and you know that pantheon.
Yep.
But to be fair, and nobody criticizes the church like quite like I do, I think, I have to acknowledge the fact that Caesar and those who followed him were the ones who essentially put paid to the traditions of those who would become those who were my forebears, at least indirectly, if we're thinking about Scots and Picts and things like that. My traditions got wiped out by Rome,
yeah.
and then the finishing touches were put on by Holy Mother Church.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So I, you know, one of the things that happens, I think, that makes in many ways that makes Europe such a bloody place, is that so many peoples were rendered tribeless and basically bootless in their own land.
Yeah.
The numbers that are you can't take Caesar for numerically accurate, but even if he's within, even if he's within 50% of the numbers that he presents, the level of slaughter and carnage, essentially Caesar went into Gaul, which is, I mean, you know, it's all the Low Countries,
yeah.
Belgium, France, part of Germany.
Yeah.
Caesar built the first bridge across the Rhine, and he went in and largely depopulated the place, which is what in turn, in years later, would start causing these mass migrations. Hey, look, real estate.
Yeah.
And so they, in a way, they became the author of their own demise.
Oh, what you, I know Hitler, yeah. Caesar, and I know it was Caesar himself, but some Roman legions went into Germany, and they went in on the wrong foot a couple times and got cut up pretty bad by those savages.
That was nine of the current era when a nasty little bastard named Varus, V-A-R-U-S, who was a general under Caesar Augustus Octavian.
Who is the second Caesar?
Marched his army, armies, there were multiple legions,
yeah,
into the Teutoburg, the Teutoburger Wald, the Teutoburg Forest. And he was,
the black shirts were pretty mean, huh?
Yeah, and he was basically suckered into it, and once they got there, they were slaughtered to the last man, and I forget how many legions eagles were taken by the Germania, and of course they were led by a guy named Arminius. Arminius had been you'll notice the IUS
like
in
to me.
Huh?
He sounds like a Roman to me.
Well, that's because he had been Romanized. He had been one. The Romans had a habit of taking hostages, and that's not like what the Congress is doing to the rest of us right now.
Yeah, well, it still happens. You're right. Yeah.
But they would take the young of a tribe as a pledge of good faith. And they would raise them as Romans and give them all the civilizing influences of Roman life. And then when if the tribe behaved in good faith, and when they were returned to the tribe, they returned as Romans, fully cognizant of Roman tactics, Roman military skills, Roman learning, Roman everything. And that's what happened with Arminius. But Arminius never forgot that he was German. And he bore a tremendous grudge against Varus, because Varus was a damn brute. And so he knew exactly what the Roman legions would do. And one of the reasons that the Germanic tribes, and particularly the Gallic tribes, were so frequently destroyed was because their tactics consisted of putting pitch in their beards, wrapping their hair around their bodies, going naked and painted blue into battle, which, you know, will scare the shit out of you. But if there's not a whole lot of order and unit cohesion, once the trained troops get their wits about them, you can beat them. And Caesar shows this time after time after time. Well, Arminius went back, trained up German warriors like Romans, and turned the tables on Varus and slaughtered them. And the Battle of the Teutoburg Forest is huge because it is what stops Caesar Augustus from expanding Roman culture more broadly into Germany,
all the way to the North Sea eventually.
And you wind up with a German culture that develops Germanically instead of being proto-Roman as much as all, you know, the whole of Gaul did, and some of it happened to Britain as well. And now here's the fun part. Arminius gets translated into German as Hermann.
Oh.
And I've got pictures of me standing in front of his really big statue, looking out over the Teutoburger Wald while I was there. And in turn, Arminius becomes the focal point of brutal German nationalism. And it was at a rally at the site of the what's it called? I knew the German word for it. Hermannsdenkmal, that big statue, at the dedication of it, Kaiser Wilhelm himself was in attendance.
The second one, the guy with the bad hand, huh?
Yeah, and then a couple of decades later, a bunch of guys in snappy uniforms gathered there with red, white, and black flags. And lo and behold, the day that I was there, my genial, kind hosts led me walking up, and they leaned over and said, "Do you see those two drunken assholes over there?" And I said,
kind of guy.
"I said, yeah." I was trying to use my German, you know.
Yes.
And they said, "Those are Nazis." I said, "You're shitting me." They said, "No, if you shit, you're not." And they were. And they had their little 88 T-shirts on, and they had their shaved heads, and they were, you know, just sitting drunkenly on the bench there.
They haven't learned yet, have they?
No. No, and you know, it's worth reminiscing for a moment that in that same day, we joyfully ran around a little German village tearing Nazi stickers off of light poles.
Good.
I had fun. Any time, any opportunity to in any wise abuse a fascist, I'm up for.
I'm with you there. I have no use for them, of course, but yeah, you hit it right. I mean, look at who helped. Here's during the beer hall attempt. Who's walking with Hitler down there? Ludendorff, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
Who was, you know, what he was in World War One? I mean, some of these people they don't get it, no matter what. They don't seem to get it. And Jim, what he says about the Russian culture is absolutely true, but the poor Russian peasants, the men who knocked Hitler's people a hell half the world away back, they were, a lot of those guys were, culture was a piece of bread and some cheese and in their home village, you know, at that point. And Jesus, I mean, no matter what happens, every group of people, if led by the wrong people, can end up in big trouble, which brings us to this truck stuff going on. How dumb are these people? I don't know what I would do if I was president and they start tying up traffic. I wonder how many of them would go to jail and have their truck seized, at least for a while, and make them pay to get them back. Because that stuff is insane. And people who are behind it should be, I don't know, sometime I think saying the magic words and having a few people disappear wouldn't be a, you sometimes wonder, you know? Because you know who's one of the guys behind this, don't you?
No.
There?
Yeah, I'm here, yeah.
Well, the one talk show host that's nothing but a drunk, he used to be a big boozer. I have a problem with boozers anyway, my second wife being a boozer who went to AA, whoopee, you know, it still didn't help her much. She just was a sober idiot instead of a drunken one. There's a difference.
You know? Well, see, there's an essential...
That's my opinion.
No, but there's an essential point there. Booze just frees you up to be the person you really are in many ways. You know, sort of like Mel Gibson standing on the side of the highway somewhere in L.A.
Bullshit, yeah.
Screaming at the cop who's trying to give him a breathalyzer about the Jews, the damn Jews.
Well, what do they have to do?
The only difference is he would have the common sense to keep his stupid anti-Semitic mouth shut if he was sober, whereas liquor freed him up to let his freak flag fly.
Bob, I was known, I was never, I'd play three or four nights a week. One night I might overdrink. I was known to put a half a fifth of gin down on a good night. But hell, I was under 40 at that time.
Yeah, but that's a workout.
But there was no booze in my house. It's funny. I didn't,
keep any alcohol in the house. I'd only drink.
Yeah, but you know what? If you work,
in reverse, drink when you're working. You know,
right? If you that's the thing. If you work, in a brewery, why do you need beer at home?
Yeah, exactly. It just. I mean, this thing has me worried because, Bob, you know our feelings about the end of the American Civil War. There are some people who haven't figured it out yet that they freaking lost. And that's a big part of the problem. Now, this president he ain't Roosevelt, for sure. But he's not what we expected or what we hoped for, you know. I think most of us hoped he leaned a lot farther left than he does. But what they're doing right now in Congress is they're making it impossible. And you and I would agree that it's very Civil War-like, like the lead-up.
It's why I keep calling it a cold Civil War, Bill.
Yep. It scares me. Because I'm too goddamn old to get out and fight with the bastards. Because I went through all those demonstrations in the 60s, and once in a while some of these guys were so pushy that they'd get popped in the snout before the thing was over. And they'd just about break down crying and run home to mama, you know. Bob, I'm a slum kid at heart, a project kid, and I know I never lost it. I still have this, if you hit the raw nerve on me, the smoke starts coming out of my ears. And that's bad when you get to be 70, you know, it's not good. But it still angers me as an American. Come on, 600,000 men died trying to settle the damn thing. And
there are a handful of people who refuse to have it settled. I don't know if you know this or not, but there was, in fact, a teabagger Congress critter the other day who compared the mess that they have deliberately gotten us into. He said, well, we didn't know this was going to happen. We was like them Confederate skirmishers is just out trying to find some shoes and stumbled into Gettysburg and found the whole dang Union Army.
Yeah, no kidding. Too bad. Tough luck. But the guys, I mean, I have to keep coming back to the men on both sides. The guy carrying that infield or that Springfield or manning that artillery, these guys had more guts than I'll ever have. I mean, I can't put myself in that spot and think.
Yeah, but back up a minute, Bill. Just take a minute. It's 2013, 150 years after Gettysburg, and you've got a member of the Tea Party who is openly allying himself, openly comparing himself and his colleagues to the traitors who took up arms against this country. Need we say more?
Because I don't know whether all I ever learned is how Lincoln wanted to just to be a peaceful reuniting of the country, but there are some people who never forget and think they can. It's time to do it again. I was always afraid of that, Bob. I always had a fear of this kind of mentality. And if they hadn't had good heart stuff when I was 51, I wouldn't be here to see it. So,
Yeah, glad you are, Bill. Glad you are.
I'm still, happy, but I don't know how I would handle it. If I was president, these guys might find out, get in front of that trailer and start pulling, Jack, because you just lost your semi. You just lost your engine. Because this stuff is ridiculous. And Glenn Beck is a big voice behind this. Guys like that, believe me, in certain societies, people who speak out like that, let's say you were in Nazi Germany and started shooting off your mouth like that, what do you think you'd be?
By now.
Yeah, you got it.
Undesirable.
I don't know if it's time to quit here or not.
Yeah, we got it. We got to roll, Bill, but it's been a good conversation.
Well,
thanks for having the patience to wait.
You really had me thinking because I know a little more about the amount of times that the Turks struck north, hiding behind religion and leading the people to death and destruction. Because it seems, I don't care what their religion is, there'll be somebody to figure out a way to get power and money out of it.
Well, that's because it's a power and money structure.
You got it. You take care now.
All right. Have a good night,
Bill.
Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. It's been a wonderful night. This is one of those where did it all go times. And hey, prayer meeting Wednesday, tomorrow night, and we got some doozies, so I hope you'll be here for that. A gentle request, please, to go to headonradionetwork.com, follow the instructions, nominate this program, please, and Dr. Bill's program, and the instructions are there for which category and how to do it. Nominate this program and Dr. Bill's program for a podcast awards, and then spread it around via social networks with the hashtag PCA13. It'd be deeply appreciated. It'd be really, really nice to sort of, well, it'd be a great way to add more members to the Horn family commune, I hope. And thank you all who contributed this ticket slog. It's a heroic effort on all your parts, and we all appreciate it. Thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. Thanks to our all volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to John Fox and to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Always, always, always. Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on The Horn.